Support for The Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette-Mail with their CGM app. Breaking news, traffic, weather, and what's going on here in the Mountain State. Find out more at wvgazettemail.com. Welcome to The Front Porch, where we tackle the tough issues facing Appalachia the same way you talk with your friends on the porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director, and this week, the struggle to stay. Young people in West Virginia wanting to stay in West Virginia, but having trouble. And we'll talk about a study that says, hey, West Virginia isn't quite as bad as you might think. Lori Lynn is our co-host, rabid Sherlock fan, lawyer, columnist. Hey, Lori. And Rick Wilson, goat herder from the American Friends Service Committee, just back from Vermont. Hey?
Hey, yeah. Checking out the hobbits in the Shire.
And the mud, true.
Yeah, most deaf.
We're going to start by looking at a series that we're doing here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting called The Struggle to Stay. You might remember about a year ago, we were involved in this with West Virginia Living, and now our reporters have been following people for up to a year looking at their decision. And we're going to hear from Colt Brogan. He's a young man from Lincoln County. He's in a program of the Coalfield Development Corporation, and he's talking about that decision he's having to make.
I feel like a home or land, no matter how big or how much, like, it's what you make it. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I mean, it's the... a lot of West Virginians I've heard say this, you know, it's the most beautiful state. Like, why would you want to leave? I mean, and then on the other hand, they'll give you 50 reasons why you might want to leave.
That last part, I love that last point. People say, I love West Virginia, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. But then there are 50 reasons why you should leave. What's going on there?
Well, that's it occurred to me several songs about West Virginia that are probably written since the 50s and 60s, and that's the theme for a lot of them. I love this place, but it's harder and harder to stay, like the green rolling hills of West Virginia, coal tattoo, it's been a long time since I've been home. I mean, this is a big theme of coming of age here and, you know, the lack of opportunities. And
it comes down to that really, really strong sense of identity that people have. If you were born here and raised here, it's a really big deal to you that you are a West Virginian. And then you get into your 20s and that there's a dual tug because you're saying, well, you know, is that enough to keep me here in a place where I have, you know, not the best economic prospects? Shouldn't I rationally want to go somewhere else? But then there's that West Virginian part of you that, you know, feels guilty for leaving. And, you know, I've always been a West Virginian my entire life. These people are thinking, what am I when that part dropped away? Am I still a West Virginian if I live in Ohio?
You know, one of these studies that comes out from this group, Wallet Hub, best and worst states for millennials. And West Virginia was the worst state for millennials. This study basically is looking at all these factors, including the fact we don't have many millennials living in West Virginia.
Right, right.
Stephen Smith, who's with the group Our Children, Our Future, wrote an op-ed in the paper about how this is a great place if you want to make a difference. It's almost like he's saying it's a statement if you're a young person and you choose to live here.
Yeah, Stephen's a friend of mine. I thought that was a really good op-ed. And in some of the past times when we've done these struggle to stay things, there's some parts of that have sometimes driven him crazy when it seems like these really privileged people are talking about how hard because there's not enough boutique-y things to do. And he talks about all the people who really are struggling to survive. It's almost a privilege. But that's not true of everyone who goes through this struggle. Everyone here, I went through it, goes through that decision. Are you going to stay here or not?
Now, Lori, you found an argument you don't hear very often in Bloomberg about how we're doing pretty well, actually. It just depends how you look at things. What was this article about?
A listener tweeted at me. It's a column by Tyler Cohen, who's an economist at George Mason University. And his overall theme is, you know, West Virginia isn't actually doing as badly as people think. Obviously, our median income is a lot lower than most states. I think we're 48th to 50th, and depending on how you measure it. But also our cost of living is very, very low, specifically our housing costs, which is most people's biggest expense. And, you know, I know this very well, having lived in Northern Virginia in a very small townhouse that was twice as much as my, you know, much larger single family home with four bedrooms here. It really affects how much you're able to buy. And you know, you can go too far with that because there are a lot of things that are not cheaper. Food, clothing. But if you look at say, a teacher making a starting, and we always talk about how low our teacher salaries are here. But if you look at, say, a teacher in Montgomery County, average starting salary, $48,000. Average housing price, $435,000. Versus Putnam County, Starting teacher makes $37,000, so less. But the average housing price in Putnam County is $140,000. So that teacher is much more likely to be able to afford a house than she would be if she were a starting teacher in the outskirts of D.C.
The author is making a set of assumptions in people's minds about how awful things are in West Virginia. And he's saying it's not as bad as what you think. So when he says things like there is economic growth there, it's 2%. It's not blistering, but it does exist. He's comparing it to what he says people think about West Virginia, which is it's a dystopian hellhole where, you know, there's a negative rate of growth.
Part of this is that with the recent election and the whole prominence of the white working class, kind of the attention of the nation has been drawn to Appalachia. And we've heard over and over and over again in the national media how terrible things are. This was an explanation of why so many people voted for Donald Trump here. And then, you know, this is Cohen just pushing back a little bit in sort of a tongue-in-cheek way. I mean, he certainly acknowledges that there's plenty wrong in Appalachia.
The other interesting comparison was to Europe, like France. And he's saying basically we're not any worse off than like the French.
Yeah, you see a lot of different comparisons about that. Like when you talk about actual standard of living, there's a ton of things that go into standard of living. Almost any American state is doing better than really a lot of Europe. And I think Japan was included in that. And again, it's because standard of living includes things like how big your house is, right? And people have much smaller houses in other countries. So it's very hard to quantify these things.
I mean, one thing that I don't think the European comparison works very well is in places like France, you have a much higher social wage and there's more support for kids. Healthcare is less expensive. Education is much more affordable. These are things that are part of the social wage, not a wage that you bring home. So, but also, you know, we've studied a lot about economic changes in West Virginia. And one thing, it is true, if you go from the benchmark of 1990, yeah, but the 80s were really a terrible year. As hard as times are here now, I think the 80s were much worse. In 83, I remember my daughter was just born. Our official rate of unemployment for the year was 17%. I mean, it was catastrophic. There are hard times now, but the 80s were just a disaster.
But in the 80s, let me ask you this, was the pain spread more evenly across the state? I mean, here we have counties that are booming up in the northern area and counties that are doing very poorly in the south.
Used to be in Weirton. You know, Weirton mm-hmm. Steel was the biggest employer in the state, and that was about the time that the steel industry declined. Wheeling, Pitt, mm-hmm. huge steel decline. And I live in Campbell County, and all these factories there were closing or drastically cutting back.
You know, one thing I think might be different now is that now we have parts of the state that are more, let's say, immune from the decline. And this is mainly a decline in the coal industry. That's most of it. And now you have places like Morgantown, North Central West Virginia, with a more resilient economy than they did in the 80s. And you have the Eastern Panhandle boom, which was just starting back in the 80s, too.
Right, which was never really that dependent on coal and now has become kind of absorbed into like an outer suburb of, you know, the D.C. metropolitan area and is booming in part for that reason.
You know, one thing to think about with this, the difference between now and the 80s is that we're less dependent on the coal industry. The coal decline is horrific. The number of jobs cut in half. But yet, because we're so much less dependent on the industry now than we were in the 80s, I think you're seeing less of a decline. And now you're starting to see things hopefully bottom out.
Also, I mean, all right, Lori and I are going to get into it here, but union jobs have declined. And so job quality has declined a lot, I think, since that time. In 79 or 80, we had higher than the national average earnings, more likely to have insurance, pensions, paid leave. And those things have changed.
One of the theories out there is that one of the reasons why people in the working class are so unhappy is because not necessarily there's been an absolute decline in their standard of living, but because there's been just a lack of progress. Compared to their parents, they might be doing no better. If you compare yourself in West Virginia to California, it doesn't feel like we're doing that well. If you compare us to the third world, we're okay.
Yeah, I think it's more generational versus, I mean, I don't know how many people in West Virginia are actively comparing themselves to Californians, right? I mean, we don't really see that much. And the article made the point that
Well, TV, though, I'll push back. You can't watch like the Home and Garden Channel without seeing some fancy house in California. It's all fixed up.
But rich people have always been on TV. I mean, I don't know that it's that different than it was, say, in the 80s, right? I mean,
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I'm just expanding on your point that parents, I think, particularly, say if you're in your 50s and you watch your kids, you know, starting out, struggling, you're thinking, wow, I did so much better than my parents did. You had a bigger house than they did and a more secure job than they did. And you're sensing that your kids and your grandkids are not going to have those same opportunities or are going to have to leave even though they don't want to or are struggling with drugs. And there's a theory about the Trump voters was that they were people who weren't actually doing that poorly themselves, but were looking around them at people doing poorly and just a sense that their community was declining, not in their own life necessarily, but the people around them.
Well, something else that's gone on is inequality has really exploded over the period of time we're talking about. And there's a lot of research in social determinants of health that show that people's sense of well-being depends on their relative position within the society in which they live because it affects their ability to participate, the amount of control they have. And there's someone, an English epidemiologist, did a study over decades of civil servants in England, Michael Marmot, who's been knighted, found that the people at the top live longer or healthier than the people just under them, who live longer and are healthier than the people. And there's this huge status syndrome, he calls it, all the way through. So I think that's a big part of how people are, how we look at our well-being.
Well, we're just getting off of spring break here in Charleston. And as part of my spring break, I had a side job. I was working sort of as a private investigator, I guess you'd say. I mean, not officially. But my job was to track down clients for a law firm that had gotten lost over the years, and I had to find out where they were. So I did a lot of driving around Mason County, West Virginia, which is actually a really beautiful place. But I noticed in talking to people, knocking on doors, that the nice houses, the nice, small, neat houses, were mostly retirees, people that retired from a good job, usually a good factory job. And then there are all these other places where people are living that are run down or not in great shape. And a lot of those folks are the kids or the grandkids of the people that had the factory job. You just get this sense of a place that used to be a better community and down on its luck a little bit. And I know there are lots of people trying to change that. Stephen Smith, I get what you're saying. But you can't deny that we're still living off of that sort of like wealth that we accumulated way back 30 years ago. And for some parts of the state, we haven't figured out how to replace it. And people are just kind of living a life that's slightly diminished from what their parents had.
First of all, I'm trying to get the image of you, Scott, as a hard-boiled private investigator out of my head right now. So I don't know if I can even concentrate
on
the
question. It only works because I'm so unassuming that people knew I wasn't a threat.
It was a dark night. Then she walked in. So what was your question anyway?
Are we asking the right set of questions in West Virginia? I heard something recently about Albert Einstein talking about if he was given this really difficult life-changing problem to have to answer, that he would spend 90% of his time thinking about what the right questions are and only 10% trying to actually solve it. We spent a lot of time in the show talking about the legislature and what it's doing with taxing and spending. Is that even the right question? Or should we be looking at other institutions in the community, schooling and higher education, to be the driver of these changes? Culture. I think everyone agrees that we want people to be able to stay in West Virginia if they want to stay. And we want people to be able to come if they want to come. And right now it's broken because people feel like they want to stay and they can't.
It's not the only issue, but it is part of it. I mean, is this a place where you can travel around? Are there good schools? Is there a place to get educated? That's not the whole thing. There needs to be all kind of work at the cultural and community level and everything else, but it is a big part of it.
Well, but is it the most important question?
Well, it's the question that the legislature is asking because those are the things that the legislature can actually address. I mean, if you're looking at what would turn things around for a dying community, well, what would turn things around is for a big employer or a bunch of medium employers to come in and have jobs for people.
Or for people in that community to learn how to create enough income that they support themselves.
Yeah.
And think about Pittsburgh, you know, as an example. It's like a hipster city now that's doing pretty well.
And let me talk about Pittsburgh. It has nothing to do with what city council did or very little. It has nothing to do with what the state government did or very little. That was a culture almost. And it was the people that made that change were the hospitals and the universities, the cultural institutions, the foundations. That's what changed Pittsburgh. And then a whole bunch of entrepreneurs. It wasn't government.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can see the government kind of fumbling around at it, right? The government's always talking about how can we make this, you know, an attractive place for investment, for business. But right, there is only so much they can do. I think, you know, they certainly try very hard, and we see them trying.
I just kind of wonder if even on this podcast, whether we ought to ask different sets of questions. Maybe it's not what can the legislature do differently, but maybe it's what can a community do that makes it work?
I think it's an all of the above kind of thing we need to look at. Speaking of Einstein, supposedly was it Niels Bohr he was arguing with, and Einstein says God doesn't play dice with the world, and mm-hmm. Bohr said, stop telling God what to do.
Hey, speaking of Rick, what's your Bible verse for
that? That's as close as I'm going to get. Einstein, that's the best I can cough up.
All right, you promised us a story from Vermont, which you say is like West Virginia without the coal.
I'm saying Vermont is like, for people out there who've read or watched The Lord of the Rings, Vermont is where the hobbits live. It's the Shire. The Dark Lord is pretty much far away from there. They don't have the Nazguls flying around and the orcs as much as we do here. So
So we're in the shadow of Mordor.
We're on the edge of Mordor in West Virginia, no doubt. Yeah.
So when you go there, I mean, your wife is from there. Do you ever say, oh, let's just move to Vermont?
Well, it lacks a certain edge that you get used to if you live in West Virginia. Plus, another liability, like aside from the real cold, is they have mud season there, which is like right about now. And the roads literally are almost impassable. It's actually scarier, I think, to drive on than snow and ice. Just squishy, squishy.
And speaking of that, I wonder if, you know, we talk about all these quality of life studies, do they factor that in? Because, you know, living somewhere where there's a month longer winter seems to me to have a real impact, certainly would for me, on your, you know, well-being and state of mind.
Well, the people get out there. That's one thing. I mean, they've totally adapted to the winter activities.
Well, one last thing. So my understanding is that Alice Cooper is a big public radio fan.
Yeah.
He was on Fresh Air. He did a huge interview with Terry Gross. Alice, if you're listening, you know, the Front Porch wants to have you come on. I understand Rick is going to be at your show.
So, yeah, my Christmas present, my wife got me tickets for Alice Cooper, who's going to be here next week. I'm upset that Scott is not pulling whatever strings West Virginia Public Broadcasting has to get me backstage with Alice. I mean, I would record it. You know, I'd do like a little mini podcast there if I didn't die from just being in the presence of...
I'm sorry. We pulled all our strings to get Beth Voorhees the backstage pass.
So wrong. She's going down.
All right. Well, that's the Front Porch for this week. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director here, along with Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson. Thanks for listening.
On the latest Inside Appalachia podcast, it's not always easy to live in these mountains, but some of us are determined to stay. We'll explore the deep roots to the region in a new series called The Struggle to Stay. First, we'll meet 20-year-old Colt Brogan.
And my people are the people of the Coal River. Those are the people that is the only one that lived the life that I lived.
Subscribe to the Inside Appalachia podcast on iTunes or visit wvpublic.org.